Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Anne Ball, Brian Lynn, Ashley Thompson, and Katie Weaver. But first, this report from Kelly Jean Kelly.
United States officials have uncovered a new way parents are abusing the college admissions system. The University of Illinois found that several parents officially gave up responsibility of their children. The move enabled the children to receive financial aid to pay for a college education. But that money is meant to help truly needy students. The case comes at a time of intense discussion about the fairness of college admissions. Earlier this year, U.S. officials found that some wealthy parents paid bribes to get their children into top universities. Investigative reporters discovered the latest case last month. It was linked to a small group of parents who live outside Chicago, Illinois. Those parents gave up legal guardianship of their children to friends and relatives. The children could then claim they were independent of their families and poorer than they really were. As a result, the students were permitted to receive up to $11,000 a year in education grants from the government. They could also receive university scholarships. Those scholarships pay up to as much as the total cost of the education. Some of the parents who took part in the scheme told reporters they were following the advice of a consulting business called Destination College. The company's website says it helps parents pay for college in the least costly way possible. Destination College did not choose to comment on the case at the time. The parents were caught when some guidance counselors at high schools near the University of Illinois heard what was happening. The counselors told the school's admissions office. University officials soon noticed that a few applications looked very similar. The forms all came from students who lived in the same areas. They all claimed the students had recently become independent from their families. And they all used a number of the same words. In total, University of Illinois officials identified about 14 of these applications over the last year. ProPublica, a nonprofit group, found that students involved in the scheme have also been accepted at other colleges. The Associated Press says the schools include the University of Missouri, the University of Wisconsin, and Indiana University. All three schools said they are investigating the issue. Andy Borst is the director of undergraduate admissions at the University of Illinois. He says, while the parents' move appears to be legal, it is probably not right. By using money meant for poorer students, wealthier families take away financial resources for students who truly need help. For example, the Illinois state government gives aid only to the first people who apply. The children of wealthier families who took part in the scheme received some of that aid. Thousands of other students were turned away. Financial aid is not endless, Borst said. The government cannot give money to every student who needs it. Mark Sclero is head of the Independent Educational Consultants Association. He says both the guardianship scheme and the bribery case from earlier in the year show the problem of college tuition. The cost of higher education keeps going up and up. But, he said, the parents who transferred guardianship still acted unfairly. Guardianship laws are designed for when parents are unable or should not be responsible for a child's well-being, he said. It isn't something that is meant to be traded away in order to beat the system. To help make sure parents do not abuse the system again, the U.S. Department of Education is being urged to change its rules. Under one proposal, students would not be considered independent if they continue receiving medical and financial support from their parents. In addition, the University of Illinois is adding new questions to its application. For example, students who claim they are independent are now asked who pays the cost of their cell phones. School officials have not yet decided what to do about the families who used the guardianship scheme. They may take away the university scholarships. But for now, they must continue to give government money to students who can legally claim it. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. Many animals live in and around bodies of water. Take ducks, for example. Ducks love the water. You can often see them floating happily on the surface of lakes, creeks, rivers, and ponds. Ducks swim effortlessly in all kinds of weather. Feathers protect them and other birds against the cold. Ducks are great hunters. You can watch them diving down under the water for food, with their bottoms and webbed feet sticking up in the air. Ducks often live near water. This is where they mate and lay their eggs. So you could say that ducks really know water. In nature, they are water experts. This brings us to our first expression, to take to something, like a duck to water. This means you are really good at something without even trying very hard. It is not a struggle for you at all. It is almost as if you were born to do it, and you really enjoy it. For example, the first time the boy got on a bicycle, he rode surprisingly well. You could say he took to biking like a duck to water. When my friend told me that she wanted to start rock climbing, I worried about her. rock climbing can be a difficult and even dangerous sport. But she has taken to rock climbing like a duck to water. Now she's even competing in rock climbing competitions. So that is our first duck and water idiom. The next one also describes something easy, with duck and water. When something is like water off a duck's back, it is no big deal. Whatever has happened has had no lasting effect on the duck or anyone else. This expression comes from the fact that duck feathers are waterproof. They let water run off a duck's body. The feathers are perfectly designed because the birds spend so much time in the water. In English, we use this saying when talking about something that has happened to someone, but the person doesn't seem to care. They are not bothered at all. Now, the opposite of that expression is to ruffle someone's feathers. This means that the person is really unhappy about something, just as ducks would be if you ruffled or messed up their waterproof feathers. Take my friend Chuck, for example. You can say anything to him, and he will not get upset. Nothing seems to ruffle his feathers. Everything just rolls off of his back. A more formal way to say this is Chuck maintains his composure. If you lose your composure, you have let a situation upset you or ruffle your feathers. Now, let's hear two friends use some of these duck, water, and feather expressions.
So, I've been hanging out with Hope more these days, and I really like her.
Yeah, I like Hope too. She's very easygoing.
Exactly. Things that would upset most people just don't affect her at all. Most things are like water off a duck's back.
And that's such a great personality trait. I have a couple of friends whose feathers are easily ruffled. If the littlest thing goes wrong, they get very upset. Such a pain.
Oh, and another great thing about Hope, she'll try anything. Last weekend, we went golfing together, even though she'd never been before, and we had so much fun.
Isn't it difficult to golf with someone who's never golfed before?
Yeah, usually. But she took to the game like a duck to water. In fact, she made shots that took me months to learn.
Didn't that ruffle your feathers? You know, the fact that she was better than you?
Not at all. For me, anything that happens on the golf course is like water off a duck's back. I just golf to spend time outdoors and get a little exercise.
And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
One of the world's biggest education companies says it will release all of its books for the United States college market in digital form first. This breaks from traditional publishing and from the more costly paper versions of college textbooks. Pearson, a British company, provides textbooks, class materials, and testing. In recent years, changes in the U.S. market have hurt Pearson's sales and profits as more students are trying to save money by buying used textbooks. Pearson's sales have dropped each of the last 5 years. Thousands of people have lost their jobs, and the longtime business had to sell parts of the company to rebuild. But now there is good news for the company's business. Earlier this year, it said it was offering less costly digital versions of their textbooks.
The company aims to see its sales grow in 2020. John Fallon, Pearson's chief executive, told the Reuters news agency, "I am increasingly confident and excited about this." Going forward, all future releases of its 1,500 current U.S. titles will be digital first. The company will update the books whenever there are new developments in the area of study. Most printed textbooks are updated every 3 years. Pearson's current e-books cost about $40. Students can pay $79 for extra learning tools connected to the e-books. Printed textbooks usually cost around $110, but can cost as much as $300. Pearson's leaders believe the change to digital first will help the company have more predictable earnings because students may have less of a reason to buy used books. Pearson said 62% of its earnings now comes from digital or digital-enabled products and services. The move to digital will also help the company cut costs. Fallon said the change gives him the belief he can stabilize the U.S. college business and start growing his company's profits once again. I'm Ann Ball.
A major demonstration in solar sailing has been declared a success by the organization that launched the experiment. The U.S.-based Planetary Society said this week its LightSail 2 spacecraft successfully used sunlight to orbit Earth. The trip was the highest-performing solar sail demonstration to date. Solar sailing is a method that can push a vehicle through space. A spacecraft is attached to a solar sail to capture wind pressure from sunlight. Light is made up of particles called photons. Photons themselves do not have any mass, but when they travel through space, they can create pressure as a force for movement. LightSail 2 is a small spacecraft that weighs about 5 kilograms. It was designed by the Planetary Society, a not-for-profit group. It launched into orbit in June from a rocket built by American technology company SpaceX. "This is a very exciting day for us and for me personally," Planetary Society Chief Bill Nye said in an announcement about the experiment. "This idea that you could fly a spacecraft with nothing but photons is surprising, and for me, it's very romantic that you could be sailing on sunbeams." The project team said it had confirmed that sunlight was responsible for moving the spacecraft to an orbital high point of about 2 kilometers. It was the first time solar propulsion was successfully demonstrated in Earth's orbit. But the technology has been tested before. In 2010, Japan's Aerospace Exploration Agency launched a spacecraft called Icarus. The agency used a solar sail to propel the craft past Venus and into orbit around the Sun. The Planetary Society deployed its first solar sail in 2015. The Light Sail 1 demonstration successfully released a solar sail before re-entering Earth's atmosphere a week later. Light Sail 2 is a $7 million project paid for by Planetary Society members as well as citizens who donated to a special campaign. The goal of Light Sail 2 is to demonstrate that solar sails can be used to propel small satellites called CubeSats. These small satellites can carry scientific instruments like cameras. Another main goal is to test the power of sunlight to propel spacecraft without the need for costly rocket fuel. Bill Nye said Light Sail 2's success could open the door to future space travel possibilities using solar sailing technology. One trip could include Nye's personal goal, using solar sail spacecraft to carry supplies to Mars. He said future missions could also look for signs of life and change the course of human history. Nye added, "Space exploration brings out the best in us." I'm Brian Lynn.
On our national parks journey, we explore a remote island near Michigan's border with Canada. It sits within a huge freshwater lake. It is one of the least visited national parks in America. Welcome to Isle Royal National Park. Isle Royal is surrounded by the deep blue waters of Lake Superior, the largest freshwater lake on Earth by area. The park's quiet forests and rocky shores offer a kind of solitude and peace not found in some of the more popular national parks. No cars or other wheeled vehicles are permitted on Isle Royal. There are no real roads on the island. The only way to get to the park is by boat or seaplane. The National Park Service operates shuttle boats that take visitors to Isle Royal. The boats leave from two Michigan ports. The journey to Isle Royal takes 3 to 5 hours. Waters are often extremely rough.
Isle Royal is the largest of the islands within the national park. It is 72 kilometers long. The entire national park protects a total area of 230,000 hectares, including some 450 islands that surround Isle Royal. 52,000 hectares is land. The rest is water. Isle Royal became a national park in 1940. In 1980, officials named it an International Biosphere Reserve because of its unique ecosystem. Its remote location is part of what makes it among the least visited national parks. But once they arrive, most visitors stay a while. The average stay for visitors to Isle Royal National Park is 3.5 days. The average stay for visitors to most other national parks is just 4 hours.
Isle Royal offers hiking, camping, boating, and even scuba diving. The extremely cold waters of Lake Superior help keep shipwrecks in excellent condition. The National Park Service protects 11 sunken boats for divers to explore. They are reminders of Lake Superior's commercial shipping history. The sunken wooden ship called the America is one of the most popular dive sites. The America carried passengers, mail, and supplies to many towns along the shores of Lake Superior. It first launched in 1898 and was used until 1928, when it was damaged. It sank to the bottom of the lake soon after. Today, divers can swim through the ship's ballroom, bedrooms, and engine room. Painted on the ship's engine is an American flag. Many divers take pictures of this site.
The Rock Harbor Lighthouse is another reminder of the area's commercial history. Workers built the lighthouse in the 1850s to help guide ships safely to the island's copper mines. The mining industry was short-lived, however. The lighthouse itself lit the way for ships for just 24 years. But it still stands today. Inside, exhibits and information help visitors understand Isle Royal's maritime history. A short hiking trail leads visitors to the lighthouse. Visitors to Isle Royal share the trails with a well-studied population of moose and wolves. Both species migrated to the island sometime in the early to mid-1900s. Scientists believe that moose swam to the island. They think wolves walked there during a freeze of the lake sometime in the 1940s. Scientists have closely studied the relationship between Isle Royal's wolves and moose since the late 1950s. It is one of the best studied predatory-prey relationships in the world. Researchers closely record their population numbers. Much of the research takes place during the winter, when the trees are bare. The researchers fly over the island to observe the animals from above.
Animal research is the only winter activity going on at Isle Royal. The national park is closed each year beginning in late October because of the harsh weather conditions. It reopens in springtime the next year. But for the other months of the year, Isle Royal offers refreshing lake breezes, green forests, and clear blue waters. Its stunning scenery and unusual solitude keep visitors returning year after year. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.